right. But then sometimes, like, Ashley will be quiet and I'll sound like a demon.
What?
Because I'll be so loud. Just oh. like, oh, okay. Welcome to the Sailor Moon podcast. R.I.P. your eardrums.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We're doing something a little bit different today again. I had an episode prepared for you all about space, but seeing as this episode is going to drop during the week of Valentine's Day, Carolyn actually had a pretty good suggestion that I liked way more than what I was originally planning. So instead of doing my original idea, I decided to do an idea about one of the most famous couples in all of archaeology, Lewis and Mary Leakey. And today I've got Cece here with me. Say hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn. You walked right into that one.
I did. Yeah, you're right. I set that one up.
Thank you.
You knocked it down. Okay. And so for those of you at home, those of you at home who don't know, you probably wouldn't know this unless you know us personally. Carolyn and I have actually been together for about 5 years now. So we figured why not be a podcasting couple talking about an archaeology couple.
As of recording this, we are still a few days out from Valentine's Day. You guys will be listening to it a few days later.
2 days after.
And actually, our 5-year anniversary is going to be on Valentine's Day. So we figured it was as good a time as any to bring some romance into the museum.
Okay, so you guys at home, you might hear the occasional jingling sound. It might be the ice cubes. We're drinking whiskey sours in honor of Mary Leakey, which you'll understand as we get further into the show. Now, where did we say we were going to start? Did we say we were going to start with Lewis, or did we say we were going to start with Mary?
Lewis.
Okay. All right, so let's start with Lewis Leakey.
Well, should we... I guess we already said they are maybe the most famous couple in archaeology. Is there anything we have to say about them as a couple first? I mean, maybe we should talk about what they're famous for, basically, before we get into it.
Yeah. So they both kind of were born and did most of their work in the early to late 1900s. And over the course of that time, opinions about where humanity began and very like European-centric ideas about civilization changed a lot. And in large part, it is due to the archaeological finds that they made over the course of the century. Between Lewis and Mary, I would say Lewis was probably the bigger proponent of the idea that civilization began in Africa. So we'll start with talking about his childhood a little bit. Lewis was born in 1903 in what has since become Kenya. His parents were both missionaries for the Church of England, and they were setting out to bring Christianity, Catholicism, to Eastern Africa. They began with nothing more than really a couple of huts and a clean water source is basically all they had at the time that he was born. They worked very, very closely with a tribe that was native to the area called the Kikuyu in the highlands of Nairobi, north of Nairobi. And Lewis grew up pretty much as part of this tribe, almost. The people who lived there welcomed him as one of their own. He played with their children growing up. The people who lived in that area had a strong emphasis on the natural world and appreciating wildlife. In the time he spent there growing up, he became immersed in their culture, in their language. He grew up speaking their language. He was fluent in Swahili before he was even a teenager. And as a child, he would often find stone tools that were ancient, and he recognized them as such because his family was had strong connections to the gentleman who eventually formed the Museum of Natural Science or the Museum of Natural History of Nairobi. So He had he recognized from an early age that these tools weren't just any tools. These were hundreds of thousands of years old, maybe older. And so he grew up with two very strong beliefs. The first being that animals were to be treasured and didn't belong in zoos. And secondly, that human civilization may very well have had its roots in on the African continent.
From all accounts, he was a very outgoing, one of the sources I read was saying that he was a very flamboyant, boisterous, loud personality kind of guy, loved talking to people, was incredibly handsome, which you guys will see in the post.
Incredibly handsome,
yeah. Like, it's uncanny. It's crazy. He looks like any of the, like, handsome aviators from the background of Porco Rosso.
Yeah, that's a pretty solid description of him. And he seemed to know it, too. Throughout the course of his life, it really seems like he used that on pretty much any lady he came across.
Well, also towards the end of his life, kind of becoming like Wolverine, yeah. Where he has like all of these young female proteges where people are like, that's weird, but not weird in the way that it probably would be.
A strange collection of
female biologists, archaeologists, and paleontologists. Paleoarchaeologists,
yeah,
I guess.
So jumping back to his early childhood for a second, though, he grew up mostly, you know, in the care of the tribe. But as he got older, he went into the public school system. And for him, it was a very uncomfortable setup. He was used to his freedom. He found being in a public school kind of an encroachment on that freedom. And so even though he was an excellent student, he never quite felt like he fit in there. He never really enjoyed it. Eventually, he was accepted to Cambridge, and he went there in hopes of becoming a canon like his father.
Always blowing up. Anybody driving is just like, nope, bye.
Again, at Cambridge, he did pretty good for himself, but, you know, school was really never his favorite. He actually used to tell, according to people who knew him, an interesting story about how when it came time for him to take his exams, he requested of the faculty that they conduct his exams in Swahili, because Swahili was a more comfortable language for him than English. And the faculty agreed, but they didn't actually have anybody who spoke Swahili to conduct the exam for him. So he ended up receiving two requests to be at a certain place at a certain time. The first one was to report to take his exam in Swahili. The second one was a request for him to conduct the exam for a student in Swahili, because they didn't have anybody else to do that, and it turned out to be himself. So the faculty actually ended up asking him to conduct his own exam. But as he was growing up, World War I had taken place kind of over the course of his teenage years. And at the time, he was too young and growing up in Africa, too far away, at least in the area of Africa he was in, too far away from the conflict to have been drafted or to have participated in any way.
He would have been, so he was born in
1903.
Yeah. So he would have been a pretty young man.
He would have been about 15, yeah, like, so at the time it ended, he would have been about 15.
Mm-hmm.
So he would have been about 11 when it started. When he went to Cambridge, obviously, he's a little bit older. After the war, large portions of what had been German Africa were given over to the British as part of the sanctions placed on Germany, which we talked a little bit about in episode 6, where we talked about World War I and how that whole conflict played out in the first couple of months. One of the really cool things that happened as a result of this transfer of territory is that there was a site in Africa that had been known to the Germans to be very heavy in dinosaur bones. And the school decided to put together an excavation in that area.
A thing that I had read about Louis Leakey is that he originally had plans to do something entirely different when he was in school, when he was in Cambridge. And he ended up injuring his foot in a sports injury. And then he ended up fossil hunting instead, which is an event that he described as changing his life, the course of his life, which is funny how events sometimes unfold that way.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating stuff, right? So initially he goes there looking to become a missionary, a canon like his father. But because he is fluent in Swahili, because he knows the area pretty well, having grown up there, he gets recommended by a friend of the family for this excavation. He applies and he gets the job. So they end up taking him out there, and they don't find any dinosaur bones while they're there, sadly. But it pretty much solidifies for him the idea that archaeology was probably where he wanted to be all along. And so he finally found his passion, and he ended up working on a couple of excavations with the university. He changed his major, I guess you would call it, his course of study, to anthropology and archaeology. In 1927, an excavation in a cave called a place called Gamble's Cave near Lake El Mentita, where two women who happened to be on vacation stopped by, because again, Louis Leakey was apparently super handsome, and ladies just dropped in on his excavation to visit him.
So handsome.
And one of them was a woman named Frida Avern, who eventually became his first wife. And she had taken some anthropology courses as well. She knew a thing or two about illustration. And so she kind of offered to stick around and help him out. And eventually the two were married. And in reviewing his finds from this particular dig while he was back at Cambridge, he was cleaning a couple of skeletons from there and from another excavation that had been performed by the university at a location called the Old Y. I think it's actually Old Y. I think it's pronounced Old Y Gorge. The Old Y Gorge. And he noticed a similarity to a skeleton that had been found earlier in 1913 by a German professor called Hans Reck. And Hans Reck had extracted a skeleton from the ground of the gorge that, based on the depth that he had found it at, would have put it at about 400,000 years old, maybe actually older, somewhere between 400 and 600,000, I think, is what people say about it. And that, at the time, was at least four times older than any known human remains that had been found so far, or human ancestor remains. So it was a big, big upheaval in the scientific community, because people genuinely did not believe that human ancestry went back that far. And in Africa, no less. You've got to remember that at this point in time, Europe was kind of, especially, you know, England, was considered to be the cornerstone of human civilization, right? The sort of Western-centric theories tended to dominate the world, but also there was an element of racism where people just didn't want to believe Africa could be.
And there was also a theory at the time, an out-of-Asia theory, that was also sort of popular, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right about that. And so this guy, Hans Reck, the scientist, places this ancestral human at about the mid-Pleistocene. And that's, at the time, well before anybody would expect to find any kind of human stepping stone, I guess. So they tear him down. They laugh him out of the scientific community. And he never really gets a chance to prove what he's found, because he found the remains in 1913. 1914, World War I broke out, and the area became off limits. London, Germany, Europe was all fighting each other and on bad terms. So his discovery kind of fell by the wayside and wasn't brought up again until Louis Leakey in 1927. Finds this skeleton that he thinks looks a lot like the one that Hans Reck had. He decides he's going to seek Hans Reck out, goes out there and kind of talks to him about it. And by this point, you know, Hans Reck is very skeptical even about his own findings, because it's just been trashed so much by this point that he's pretty much done talking about it. But Louis Leakey goes out there and makes him a bet. And I think, I'm not really clear on what happened here. I think Louis Leakey was actually skeptical of his findings and didn't believe that they would be as early as Hans Reck had initially reported. So he makes him a bet that if they both go back to this area of the Old Y Gorge, they will find human remains within 24 hours. And they do. They take a trip out there within, you know, a couple of hours of arriving. The area turns out to be lousy with, like, tools from early, you know, early human ancestors. And they do find some remains. Somehow, Louis Leakey ends up coming around to what Hans Reck originally stated was the case and thinks like, oh, wow, he was right. These remains really are that old. But later on, he changed his position about that. And so did Hans Reck. So I'm not really sure what caused them to go back and forth in that manner. But the takeaway ended up being it pretty much confirmed what Louis had been thinking all along, which is that the ancestors of humanity must have come out of Africa. You know, between finding these remains and these stone tools, he was very sure after this point that that was going to be the case. So he wrote a book about it called Adam's Ancestors. And while working on this book, he ended up having an assistant come on board to do the illustrations, who was a young woman named Mary. And so we'll stop there and we'll backtrack in time a little bit and talk about...
Rewind.
Yeah. Mary Nickel, who became Mary Leakey. For you all listening at home, you can probably tell this is the moment we've been waiting for, just because Mary Leakey was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Mary was born in 1913 and was a stone cold badass. One of the things I've learned from Museum of Natural Mystery is British paleoarchaeologist ladies named Mary love dogs, love smoking, and love digging up bones. And that is a true thing to say about Mary Leakey.
She was kind of a hellion as a little kid. And it's really inspiring to see, because she really is just kind of the perfect story of somebody who knew what she wanted to do and found a way to do it. She was born to a couple of parents who were famous in their own right.
Yeah, I believe one of her parents was a famous landscape painter, and the other, I guess her mom was an archaeologist.
She was a descendant of a famous antiquarian, and her uncle was an archaeologist.
Okay.
Yeah, and so she was born with an appreciation for archaeology and anthropology, because her parents were sort of these kind of well-known, famous painters. They moved around quite a bit. They spent some time living in America. They spent some time living in southern France. They spent some time living in Egypt. And it was definitely Egypt where, for Mary at least, her interest in ancient humans really kind of took hold. And much like the case was with... Louis Leakey's parents, where they had friends in scientific communities, so too did her family. And she was encouraged by the historians of Egypt to kind of keep at it, digging up tools, digging up old bones, stuff like that. But another really important thing to mention about her parents, because I really think that this influenced her attitude about things quite a bit, is that her grandparents had actually been very serious abolitionists during colonial Britain, I suppose. They did set up communities for freed slaves in Africa and in India, and I think that shaped a lot of her outlook about life. When she ended up going back to school in London, shortly after her father died, even though she was fluent in French, she did really poorly in some of her classes because, she flunked French because her accent was provincial. And I think she took a lot of issue with that because it seems like she was the kind of person who didn't suffer privilege that much. She really seemed to have an attitude where it was like, what, because I sound like a poor person, I'm not speaking French properly? That's...
And the people who knew her and people who knew her later in her life said that she was a person who didn't suffer fools. People who liked her, somebody who worked with her described her as being gentle but no nonsense. Other people described her as being a person who had a literal stinkers list of people she didn't like working with.
That sounds more like the descriptions I've heard of her. So she bragged in her later life that she never passed a single exam while she was in school. And to her, that was a point of pride. She was expelled twice from different schools. The first time for refusing to recite poetry. The second time for causing an explosion in the chemistry labs. So they kicked her out of school. And I don't know if she ever actually finished. After that, she tried to get into different colleges, but because of her poor academic career up to that point, nobody really wanted her. Her mom, being a relatively well-off person, tried to pull some strings to get her into Oxford, but Oxford literally was like, no, not happening. She should pursue something else. And it's really funny because later on, after she was famous, they ended up giving her an honorary doctorate. But yeah, they...
Which I hope that she used as kindling to light her cigars.
Yeah, I get the impression that's the kind of person she was. Pretty much every, you know, every school, every university she tried to get into burned her pretty hard. So what she ended up doing is attending classes at the local museums, you know, Museum of Natural History, other places around London, that were teaching classes on archaeology and anthropology, because she knew that's what she wanted to do. Like, that was her interest. It had always been her interest. Anthropology and illustration was kind of, you know, her favorite thing to study. So even though she wasn't registered with the museum's classes, even though she wasn't a museum staffer or even a volunteer in any way,
she audited all of those classes.
Yeah, she audited a bunch of classes out of the museum.
Until she got the opportunity to do digs.
Right. She met a bunch of famous people that way. Eventually, she got, I guess, what would today be the equivalent of like a summer internship working on different excavations. And because of her skill in illustration, she kind of got passed around from like a couple of famous people, particularly women scientists, actually. They don't really talk about it a lot. Like, her first mentor was a man. But after that, it was like a series of lady archaeologists who asked her to do the illustrations for their books. And that is how she ended up coming to work on the Adam's Ancestors book with Louis Leakey. Shortly after she arrived there, the two started a relationship, even though he was already married. And it was kind of a big deal.
I really want to talk about their courtship, because this is probably the thing I most meticulously took notes about, because I'm a busybody. So, it's actually pretty hard to find out information about their courtship, considering that he was married and 10 years older than her, and the father of one young child with another on the way.
Yeah, pretty scandalous.
Pretty scandalous. You know that he named one of his findings after his first wife? I bet that was awkward. while they were together, in better times.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, from how Mary talks about it, basically, when she was interning, he approached her while she was working on a dig. So one thing about Mary is that she was more interested in prehistoric tools than fossil excavation. She had said something about this to the effect of my preference of stones to bones. So anyway, the way that Lewis wooed her was basically by chatting her up while she was working on a dig to talk about early flint tools and how early flint tools were created.
Which, very suave.
Like, that's so great, though. I mean, if somebody is just like, hey, girl, I know how much you love the excavation of flint tools. If you're really into that, you're just like, yes. And also, if he's just like this handsome, extremely handsome, like, Ghibli pilot.
It's like, would you mind taking a look at this Pleistocene hammer, right?
The Pleistocene hammer.
Louis Leakey, the Pleistocene hammer.
So a lot of the details of their courtship were discreetly blurred because he was married. And she kind of talks about how he just...
You mean like his peers and like his like professional venues covered up
the scandal? Nowadays, if you look them up, it's just kind of like, there was a man named Lewis and a woman named Mary, da-da-da, blah-blah-blah, and then they're married.
Oh, okay.
And they just kind of, now...
They gloss over his first wife a lot.
Yeah, they just kind of skip poor Frida.
That's true, yeah, and looking it up, I had an extremely difficult time. It took me forever to even find out what her name was.
I found it out by looking up Mary, because people will talk about it in conjunction with Mary, but not in conjunction with Lewis.
And also, Mary didn't seem to have a problem talking about it, but Lewis, yeah, definitely, that gets glossed over in a big way. Kind of an offensively big way, in my opinion.
So one of the interesting things that I read about this whole situation going down is that basically when Frida found out about the situation between Mary and Lewis, because they actually went abroad and fell in love while they were on the
Adam's Ancestors
Old
Wye? Oh yeah, the Old Wye Gorge.
Yeah, well they were at the gorge. So basically Frida is basically like, all right, I see what's going on. Peace out. I'm done. you guys just have to deal with the consequences now. Goodbye.
Yeah. Yeah, props to Frida for just leaving and not being like, I'm going to try and, you know, like, make this work or, you know, cater to this guy's whims. She was just like, I see this. I'm finished. We're divorced. And I imagine being divorced was probably a bigger deal in, like, the 19...
Oh, in the early 30s?
This would have been, yeah, this would have been, what, 1932, I think, is when Mary started working on Adam's Ancestors. Pretty sure. So
1933. They met in 1933. At an excavation in Devon. And that's when he approached her. Yep.
Yeah. So, and, so I'm sure there was a bigger stigma tied to that move. And yeah, his colleagues took it pretty seriously. Like, it didn't go over well in a lot of situations.
His wife was at home with morning sickness.
Yeah.
While he was falling in love with this 20-year-old intern who is secretly much more talented. Sorry. I mean,
but it's
historical
true, though.
Record.
Yeah. She was... pretty hardcore. I mean, yeah, and so his peers called him out on it. The staff at Cambridge questioned his morals, started questioning whether or not he was an honest person, reevaluated some of his previous findings, and it really kind of, like, it had the potential to ruin him.
Yeah, it derailed his career and his funding.
In a huge way, like, all of his grants dried up, all of his funding dried up. Meanwhile, you know, him and Mary ended up, you know, being on the way to their own first child, but they were having a hard time getting work anywhere.
And it seems like at that time they were very happy. Just...
yeah, that's true.
Just...
it's worth noting that that is absolutely the kind of thing that should, you know, if it's going to break a couple, like, that would be the circumstances that would do it. But they stuck together. They really stuck it out.
So in... I'm just going to read from this article because it's really hard... In April 1935, they went together to Old Wye, sharing an air mattress by night and exploring the gorge minutely and slowly by day. Later, blissfully happy and still unwed, they set up house near Cambridge. They were married in December 1936, 2 months after his divorce became final, and 3 weeks before they left again for Africa, this time not to return for 9 years, and only to visit. So it seems like the early part of their relationship just seems like relationship goals, like two people who really love each other and are doing really cool work together and having a freaking blast.
Broke as hell.
Yeah, and broke as hell sharing their air mattress.
Pretty much, yeah, in the wilds of Africa. And you may have caught a bit of foreshadowing there because Carolyn mentioned in the early days of their relationship, they seemed like they were very much in love. And we'll get to that in a second. But they were super broke because nobody was paying them to do the work that they were trying to do anymore. And honestly, the thing that ended up kind of pulling them out of the gutters was the outbreak of World War II. This part always, like, you know, when I read about it, seems very wacky to me. It was like Lewis went off on a bunch of bizarre adventures while Mary did, like, some serious scientific groundbreaking work.
And also had their kids.
Yeah, and also had their children, all of their children, during, like, between 1941 and 1948, give or take. Yeah,
because they had a pretty big discovery in 48. So.
Yeah, and so what ended up happening for Lewis while Mary was at home having children and still being a scientist the whole time is that he got drafted by the British intelligence service because they needed somebody who could operate in Africa, who understood the cultures and the languages. And so they pretty much stationed Lewis in the Kenya region, and he just kind of bumbled around and was sort of like a spy, I guess you could call him. But there's some really odd stories about the things that happened to him while he was there and the things that he did. For example, there was a story about how he was recruited to help a British officer remove a curse that he had accidentally placed on himself and his men.
Who hasn't been there, though?
Yeah, happens to the best of us. And so they needed a guy who understood the curse to help them remove it. But those were the kinds of adventures that Lewis Leakey was having while Mary Leakey was at home taking care of their children. But eventually the war wrapped up and he came back home and they kept on sciencing their way around the Old Wye Gorge. And the stories about this era of their life are actually really charming to hear because once their children were born, they really got the children in on the family business, basically. They would go fossil hunting with all of their kids.
So one cool thing, okay, maybe not cool, but one thing about Mary is that she was determined not to let having kids stand in her way as a scientist. And she says something to the effect of just like, I quite liked having my children, but I wasn't going to let it stand in the way of me being a scientist. And she didn't.
And it wasn't just her children. They had like 6 Dalmatians that they took with them everywhere. And some other kind of dog that I saw in one of the photos. Like a little white dog with brown spots.
They had so many dogs.
They had a ton of dogs. And they also had hyraxes, which is like a large rodent. And Mary Leakey insisted that the animals be allowed to eat at the table with the family when they had their meals. And would also insist on giving the animals parts of their rations that they had planned out for the week so that the animals wouldn't be hungry. So it was important to her that their pets got to eat sometimes before her own family.
And like butter. Not like, yeah. Oh no, we're starving, we don't have anything to eat, but the dog had 9 potatoes. It's like, we got to use the last of this butter to make sure that this dog is having a good time.
Yeah, that this potato isn't a boring taste for this dog.
Which...
And that was pretty much the ebb and flow for them. You'll see photos of the Leakeys working on excavations, and it always looks like Lewis is kind of lying around while Mary's doing the hard work.
And then there's like, there are like 3 kids and like 90 dogs also helping. So one of the things about the Leakeys that it's important to note is that they are a family of paleoarchaeologists. Mary and Lewis, their oldest son, not oldest, I don't know if he was the oldest, Richard?
Richard was the middle one.
Middle son, okay. So Richard Leakey is a pretty well-known paleoarchaeologist in his own right, and later he and Mary, after Lewis passed away, did a lot of work collaboratively. Richard married a woman named Maeve, I believe.
I think. I don't and know she, too much about his family. I know, like, his kids, I'm pretty sure, are also archaeologists.
Well, his wife was a zoologist, and their daughter, Lewis and Mary's granddaughter, is also, I believe, a paleoarchaeologist. So it's just, like, the family business of discovering the history of humanity as we know it.
Yeah, I mean, really, picture it as this, like, Indiana Jones era group of people traveling around, digging up old tools, digging up old bones. And they've got their 6 dogs and their 3 kids. And Mary Leakey is sitting there smoking her cigars and drinking whiskey cocktails the entire time.
And telling people to stop talking because she couldn't abide small talk or singing at digs.
That was kind of the way things went for them. They just kind of wandered around as a family making scientific discoveries. And then in 1948... they made a pretty significant discovery. They found a creature that is known today as the Proconsul Africanus. And this was like a small primate, considered today by science to be like a somewhere in between monkeys and the great apes, but also probably an ancestor to the human being. This creature and other primates, yeah. So first primates, and then by extension humans. And this little creature it's got a body very much like a monkey, but the skull is in shape kind of human-like and also kind of ape-like, but its teeth are definitely, you know, very much like modern apes. And so it really has sort of the traits of all 3 different branches of, you know, like the primate family. And it was a pretty big deal at the time because it really kind of showed how far back, you know, millions of years back, this evolution chain might have been running. And so that was the first major discovery that these two made together, like really like the most significant discovery to come out of the time that they had been together up to that point. And it kind of put them back in the limelight and in the good graces of the scientific community. Because by this point, you know, they'd been together for a while. They were clearly, you know, a family very much in love. And so people sort of got over the scandal that had taken place about a decade earlier. The funding started coming back in again. And this is kind of where they turned into Lewis and Mary Leakey, really, in the way that we know them today, where Lewis Leakey was kind of the face of their operation, did a lot of traveling around, meeting with people, securing their funds, and Mary did all the excavation work pretty much and made most of their significant discoveries.
One thing about Mary is that she was meticulous in excavation and meticulous about technique and being vigorous in her scientific claims. Like Emery said, Lewis was kind of the guy that sold the ideas to get the funding, that did the traveling. So for some of their other big excavations, as their relationship continues, as their discoveries continue, she basically kind of stays in the gorge and he travels all over being the hype man, the family hype man.
Yeah, the front man for the band.
The next big find was the Australopithecus Boisei. Australopithecus Boise to men.
No, I'm sorry. I don't,
this is my one talent, guys.
But you know what? That joke actually fits really well into the into the timeline of evolution.
Primates to men.
Yeah.
Which was another member of the hominid lineage.
Sorry, I'm still laughing about it. Yeah. Yeah, anybody who's taken, you know, an anthropology class probably has heard of Australopithecus. It's really like the step before what became human beings. It's not quite there yet, but it is like an upright walking hairy little, basically like a hairy little dude. It's like a hobbit. Not quite. They were tool using upright mammals. People really think that the social structures that became human social structures started probably with Australopithecus. So that was a huge find, especially coming out of Africa, because, you know, now you're starting to see the ladder that leads to us, right? You've got the proconsul, maybe one of the earliest known ancestors, possibly of human beings. Then you've got an Australopithecus, which is, you know, the step before you get to like Homo habilis, and Homo habilis comes next. So they found the Australopithecus in 1959, if I'm not mistaken.
In 1960 is when they found Homo habilis, or the handyman.
The handyman is what that name means in
so
Latin.
Basically, they found Tim Allen.
Right, yeah. So Homo habilis, which is a species of hominin, kind of, you know, a direct link to the modern human being. The specimen that they found was also like early Calabrian stages of the Pleistocene. So that, I mean, but that would have put him about 2.1 to 1.5 million years ago. And so now you've got this kind of this direct timeline for when these creatures would have existed.
And the full timeline is nuts. It's crazy to see human lineage evolving over time. It's so frustrating when you see people on the internet be like, oh, well, where's the missing link? Well, there's several. There's several.
Yeah, so Homo habilis, when you, like, if you were to put it in the timeline, it would actually be the least modern human specimen. It would be the furthest back that we've got so far, but it would be recognizably, you know, a human skull and a human body frame. And everything that comes after it is just one step closer to, you know, our skeletons. So, you know, between this and the previous finds that they'd made, they kind of put together, really just as a couple, right, through their discoveries across a couple of decades, this very distinct look at where we might have started and where we might have ended up.
The fossils that they found helped to really cement bipedalism.
Yeah, you can say it either way. I don't think that's like tomato tomato.
Yeah, it's the less common version of it. It was cut out of that song, but it helped cement where bipedalism fell in human development. The ability to walk on two legs coming before kind of the signature big brains that we know, and yeah, also tool use. Because right, when you have 2 feet, you free up those front 2 hands for other things like tools.
Yeah, that's right. I think up to that point, the common theory for bipedalism was that the ability to use tools caused bipedal walking because the hands needed to be free. But the evidence found by the leakies in these different specimens was more like we were able to walk upright first, and because our hands were free, we started using tools, not the other way around. And that is a pretty significant outcome of their discoveries. It really popularized this idea that up until this point, people were very hostile to, that human ancestry could be traced back to Africa rather than Europe, rather than Asia. Although cases could still be made for both, and it is still a point of contention, I think most people really have come around to that idea. You know, Louis Leakey never really dropped his certainty about that, and he really believed that you could probably learn a lot about how people developed tools and learned to use tools from watching modern primates. And so he actually was responsible for putting the idea in Jane Goodall's head to do her work with chimpanzees. Like, if I'm not mistaken, he was the one who sent her to do that.
Yeah, remember when we said he's kind of like Wolverine with the young female apprentices? This is where that comes in. And with Jane Goodall in particular, some sources say that he kind of saw her as a daughter figure, which, you know, he did have a daughter, the daughter who was 5 when he left Frida,
right?
Or rather, when Frida left him, which, you know, that's complicated. But yeah, that he particularly took an interest in mentoring her, and that Mary, who didn't like people anyway, could be very standoffish and was kind of intimidating to Jane Goodall when they first met. When one of Lewis's protege's wives came around, Mary actually drilled her in a spelling test.
What? I've never heard that story.
And the woman said, like, I think I did quite well, but not as well as Mary. So the three women that Lewis mentored the most are sometimes called Leakey's Angels, sometimes also called the Trimates. From Wikipedia, the Trimates, sometimes called Leakey's Angels, is a name given to three women, Jane Goodall, Diane Fossey, and I'm sorry if I mispronounce this, Birut Galdikas?
Right. She was the one who worked with the orangutans. Diane Fossey was the gorillas.
Chosen by anthropologist Louis Leakey to study hominids in their natural environments, they studied chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans, respectively.
Yeah, and so you can kind of see, right? So Jane Goodall is plenty famous in her own right, and she deserves all of the credit for her work with the chimpanzees, just like Diane Fossey and Birut. But Louis Leakey was kind of low-key behind that whole push to study primates in their habitats, see how their social structures work, see how they use tools when they use tools. And that knowledge has been, his hunch was right, like, it's been invaluable to our study, not only of ourselves, but of these primates in their own habitats. You know, his fingerprints are all over history when it comes to our ideas about how we came to be human. And that's true for Mary as well. And as their relationship progressed, unfortunately, and we kind of hinted at this earlier, they sort of diverged in their ideas about, you know, what was scientifically accurate and what wasn't. It sounds to me like Louis Leakey kind of went off the rails a little bit as he got older.
Anywhere between 1968, 1970-ish is kind of when things started to go south between Mary and Louis. And I think to get to this part, we kind of have to talk about the rough patch that they experienced.
You know more about this than I do.
So as satisfying as it would be for it to just be, and then they kept on doing science until they both died of old age together, hand in hand. History isn't really that neat. So their relationship kind of starts to go off the rails for a lot of reasons. And one of the things that we had talked about is, when we were doing our research, is this the story of a couple and what they overcame together, or is it the story of a woman who overcame being overshadowed by her more gregarious and also male in the 30s husband?
Definitely.
To discover some of the most significant scientific findings about early humans. And we really couldn't tell which kind of story it is.
Still a mystery even now, really.
And also, what tore them apart? It's not really that clear. As with their courtship, it's a little bit more sanitized. The narrative is a little bit controlled.
Yeah, it definitely is. So one of the reasons that I had chosen this topic when we initially talked about it is because I've always, you know, I've seen the Leakeys like a few times throughout my life, and I've known them as this like couple who did all this amazing science work together. And, you know, people were like, yeah, it's super cute. That's like the way to go. If you're going to be scientists, you want to be scientists together, making these breakthrough discoveries. But the more we looked into it, the more we found that not only do most articles about this couple focus on Louis Leakey, but they tend to credit discoveries made by Mary to Louis. He really gets all of the fame and most of the fortune for the finds that really it was her out there in the fields digging stuff up while he was, you know, wandering around, securing the funding, shaking hands with people, you know, rubbing elbows.
In looking at what drove them apart, Louis Leakey passed away in 1972. Leading up to that, they'd been separated for a few years.
Which is actually almost never reported anywhere.
Yeah, you have to kind of dig to find out some of that information. There could be a few reasons for this. So, some believe that it might have been because of how popular Louis was with the ladies. As we said, he was a very handsome man in his youth. And even when he was older, the ladies still flocked to him.
Yeah, that whole thing about ladies showing up at his dig sites just to visit and chat with him doesn't seem to have ever gone away, even when he was an old man.
This is the statement of the anthropologist's wife of one Harvard professor that met Louis Leakey. "I first met him when he was old and ugly and had practically no teeth left, and he had a belly hanging over his belt. And still, he was one of the most attractive men I had ever met. Women just fell all over themselves for him."
Yeah, I could see that being a problem.
There was his popularity with the ladies. There was the fact that he was always traveling and that she was in the field and that they were separated by distance. Then there are kind of the more career slights. Like, you have her saying that it seemed to her like he was taking the credit for discoveries that they had made together or that she had made alone. And that over the course of the decades that they spent together, that was getting a little bit too much to bear. She didn't have the same formal educational credentials that Louis did. And so as she continued to make discoveries, she became much more comfortable talking about it and lecturing. But I think that was always a sore spot for her. And it's easier, I think, for some folks to attribute those things to him because he did have that more academic background. And then you have California Man.
Yeah, California Man. I don't understand where this idea came from in the first place, but at the end of his life, Louis Leakey was convinced that there was some kind of early human ancestor in California, which if you think about, you know, just geographically, like the spread of human ancestry doesn't really make any sense. But he was dead serious about it, and Mary Leakey thought that that was a pretty bogus idea. For all the same reasons I just mentioned, it doesn't really fit with anything else they'd ever discovered up to that point. And it doesn't really fit with science's ideas about human, like the spread of human culture or, you know, populations over time. Today, nobody really believes that California Man is a thing. But, yeah, Louis Leakey took that idea to his grave. You know, he really started to believe in that. The two had a lot of academic arguments about whether or not that was even possible. And then they split, and his health started to decline shortly after.
Another thing that might have contributed to the split that I forgot about is that, you know how Mary was so meticulous? She didn't think that some of his claims were academically vigorous enough. Or that she didn't believe that we could infer, basically. She just wanted to kind of stick to what can we tell from the findings?
Right.
What can we tell from what we've excavated? And I believe that Louis was more into interpreting those findings, and she didn't believe that that was scientifically sound. She wrote an autobiography called Disclosing the Past, and From the way that she talks about Louis in interviews and from what I hear, the way that she talks about him in her autobiography, it seems like even to the end of her life, because she passed away in 1996, over 20 years after he passed away, that she still cared about him a lot, and there was still a lot of love and warmth there, but it seems like there was also some bitterness from one or all of the things that we just talked about.
Yeah, it's hard to say what split them apart, and so it becomes a much more muddled tale after that point. Lewis died in 1972, and after that, if you really look at the trajectory of their careers, it really seems like from that point forward, Mary really broke free and became what she had always been becoming up to that point. After Lewis's death, Mary made one of the most scientifically relevant discoveries to this whole, really this whole theory of human evolution. She discovered a pair of Homo habilis footprints is what they were. And there's two sets of footprints, possibly three, walking side by side. But then there appears to be a smaller set of footprints walking within the larger set of footprints, giving the impression that it's a family unit, like a mother, a father, and a child. And it's significant because they are preserved in volcanic ash. So it kind of paints this picture of this family unit of ancient humans traveling through an area that's recently been hit by a volcanic eruption. And you have to wonder, you know, what must those individuals have been thinking, seeing the volcanic sky, you know, crossing through this area, possibly with their child. And it's really up for debate. It's a big point of contention whether or not this smaller set of footprints is actually there or if it's just something that we're reading too much into the impression. It's very hard to tell for sure.
I guess Mary strongly believed that there was another set and that occasionally, I guess, it was the smaller set was within the bigger set,
Walking behind them, yeah. But, it, I mean, if she's right about that, it kind of goes to show just how early, you know, the structure of the human family might have, you know, started coming into play, because these would have been about 1.2 million years old, I think, these footprints. She was very much a scientist in her own right. And with Lewis, you know, having passed on, unfortunately for him, she really became a very prominent figure in the scientific community who was getting the credit that she had deserved all along.
And I believe that it was the late 70s. That she discovered the footprints, or her team discovered.
I think it was 1974.
Yeah. It was a while after Lewis passed away. She retired from field work in 1983, but she passed away in 1996. From what it seems like, even though she retired from field work, she never stopped writing and researching up until her death in 1996. So she just never quit. She was nonstop.
Yeah, so the story of the Leakeys turns out to be a much more troubled tale than it would appear at first glance. All of the publications, especially the official publications, I think, from like their foundation website, for example, really paint this very glamorous impression of them, where they really seem like this scientific duo that was just, you know, cracking these mysteries left and right.
And maybe they were for a number of years.
Yeah, but it seems, you know, like you mentioned, that the truth is actually that whole situation, that whole familial atmosphere may have been a little more temporary than the official reports would have you believe. It does seem like, that they got off to a much rockier start than anyone could have imagined. You know, that scandal with his first wife, Frieda, the way that they split from each other, the fact that apparently his son Colin never even met him for 20 years, his first son from his first marriage, is really sad when you think about it. And in spite of, you know, all of the credit that Lewis Leakey gets, it really seems like Mary was the one doing most of the work during that time frame. Like, I think, I'm not sure if it was Lewis that discovered Homo habilis or not. I feel like it's one of those situations where it's credited to him, but it might have actually been his wife that discovered that. And if that's true, she would have made all of their major finds during the time frame, you know, that they were operating. And then in the end, things kind of seem like they fell apart a little bit, because, you know, whether or not he was responsible for most of those discoveries, I mean, I know he wasn't responsible for most of the discoveries. He was responsible maybe for a few, but he took credit for pretty much all of them. And I could see that, you know, creating this tension between the two of them. I could see her being the kind of person who wouldn't want to put up for very long with his crazy ideas about prehistoric human beings, rather ancient human beings.
Ancient
from the time of prehistory in California. That is kind of a wild assumption to make with very little evidence for it.
Even if their marriage wasn't perfect, and even if towards the end, however things ended up, they, against all odds, stuck together, discovered things that changed our understanding of who humanity was, what we were before we became who we are now. And it seems like they were happy for a long time, and sometimes things don't work out, but it seems like the world is better for that partnership. Our breadth of knowledge is better, and it seems like...
For most people, right? Like, you hear the idea that, like, oh yeah, human ancestry begins in Africa, and you take it for granted. You don't really think twice about where that idea comes from, but it turns out that idea comes from Lewis and Mary Leakey.
But mostly Mary.
Yeah, and so it ends up painting kind of a complicated, but ultimately, you know, hopefully, more truthful picture of one of the most famous couples in all of archaeology and anthropology.
I guess technically they're paleoanthropologists.
Paleoanthropologists, yeah, is the proper term for them. And that's all I've got on that topic. How about you, Carolyn? Any closing thoughts?
Mary Leakey is a badass.
Yeah, if you're going to be a scientist and also are a lady, if your name is Mary, it sounds like your odds are pretty good.
Look, if your name is Mary, science will...
Probably.
Maybe well, not
first
be good it,
first
to you,
it'll be rude, and then it'll be kind.
It'll be kind
like
after you're
years
dead.
After you're gone, yeah. That's so, the takeaway. That's the lesson we learn. If your name is Mary, and you're a scientist, things are going to be really bad for you at first, and then eventually you'll get recognized long after the credit is due.
Yeah. What a complicated journey.
Yeah, and we'll put up, of course, plenty of pictures for you
so
all to see.
So many pictures.
Yeah.
We only got one of, like, hot Lewis Leakey, though. A lot of them are just, like, when he's, like, an old man, and since we don't really get to talk to him or see how charming he is, it isn't.
Yeah.
We don't get the effect that the lady
was. If you see the old Lewis Leakey, the appeal is kind of hard to appreciate, but we did get one pretty decent photo of him as a young man, and when you look at that one, you're like, okay, I guess I see it now. The same is true for Mary as well. Yeah, like you take one look at her and she looks exactly the way she's been described.
She looks like a tough old broad, even when she's young. She's like a young woman who looks like she's going to be a tough old broad someday. Maybe that's just us knowing, but...
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know though, man. Like she was tough from the time she was a kid. Like she really, like she went through school. She was like, school is stupid. It's not for me. I know what I want to do. And even though she didn't really do school the way most people do school, she still was like, all right, I got this figured out. I'm going to go to these classes. I'm going to be there even though no one invited me. And then I'm going to get a job. And she did. And she worked her whole life to get out of her husband's shadow pretty much. And then when she did, she really like made the biggest discovery of them all. So yeah, after looking into it, like the truer story of Mary Leakey than the one that I initially understood it to be was far more inspiring than like the narrative that's been crafted. Like she really got kind of put in on the back, like in a back seat to her husband through time. But I really think she was the, you know, the unsung hero.
Better scientist.
Of that relationship for sure. So anyway, yeah, check out pommag.com, POMEMAG, to get a look at some of this stuff. And of course the creatures that they discovered, we'll put up photos of those as much as we can for you to check out, and some of the bones that they and the tools that they dug up. And anything you want to plug, Carolyn? Next week is Space Week, right? Is that next week already?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Time really flies. Yeah, the next week on POM Mag is all gonna be space stuff. It'll be out of this world.
Yeah, I think my own space episode is probably gonna end up waiting till next season. So we're coming to the end of the first season of Museum of Natural Mystery here. If you guys have any questions, any topics that you'd like me to discuss in the coming season,
write a letter. Yeah. Tweet, write.
You can catch me at natmysterypodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at me on Twitter, at natmysterycast. Those are probably the best ways to get a hold of me. Also, we are on SoundCloud and on iTunes, so definitely subscribe to get these episodes as they come out. And leave a review if you like the show. Let us know how we're doing here. Of course, you know, it's great feedback for me, but it also lets other people who are interested in these topics find the show. It makes us more visible when you run a search for, you know, dinosaurs, for archaeology, for paleontology. Your reviews allow other people to see this show.
And we hope that you guys had a wonderful Valentine's Day, that you didn't steal the credit from your significant other's scientific discoveries.
Yeah, definitely don't. Don't do that. If you did that, write in and let us know if somebody did that to you.
Let us know how it went.
Share the story here. I'll call him out on the show. And so I'll see you guys next time with the story of discovering a primate that up until very recently was actually believed not to exist. But until then, I'm Emery Cool Cats. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
A bone you'd prefer. The Lewis Leakey story.
Plugging a leaky.
You know what? We're not drinking anymore whenever we do this show.
Happy Valentine's Day.